Thank you very much for your invitation. I shall speak English, but my English is so bad that everybody can understand it. I'm sure of that. My topic begins with a question. Why church and state systems in Europe do not work properly anymore? Why are they changing? Why the old systems are declining? This is my starting point, the question, and I try to give an answer. And the answer I try to give is, it is because today we need to face not only a religious pluralism, but a cultural and ethical pluralism. And our church and state systems were built to deal with a religious pluralism, not with a cultural and ethical pluralism. This is the point I would like to make along my speech. Religious pluralism was not a novelty in Europe. Was something well known in Europe. Europe had been divided for centuries between Catholics, Protestants, Orthodox, very frequently with division lines crossing the same village or the same region. But this religious pluralism had always been contained within a common horizon, a shared horizon, defined by the reference to the same sacred books, what we called the Old and the New Testament, the Jewish Testament and the Christian Testament, not only, a common reference also to the same interpretative corpus, the patristic, the fathers of the Church. Of course, Jewish and Muslim communities have been living in Europe for a long time. But quite early, Jews were faced with the alternative between assimilation or persecution. And they chose the first without avoiding the second. And Muslims, after the Catholic Reconquista of Spain, were confined to a rather peripheral European region, the southern Balkans. So my point is that religious pluralism in Europe has predominantly been an intra-Christian pluralism. And the religious conflicts which divided Europe after the Great Schism and most of all after the Protestant Reformation, these conflicts did not create insuperable cultural divisions. Of course, the way of, the relations between man and woman, citizen and state, state and religion, were conceived differently in Catholic states and in Protestant states. And still today they are partly conceived differently. But this difference did never become so huge to create incompatibility and to prevent mutual understanding. And the proof that a common background does exist is the unification process of Europe. There are a lot of shortcomings here, but the unification process of Europe is the living proof that a common idea, a common notion of citizenship has taken place in Europe. Now, this common horizon has become weaker and weaker because of two elements, two factors. First, immigration. Immigration brought into Europe a large number of persons who do not know and do not share some central features of the European cultural heritage. The way political or family relations are conceived, or more at a day-to-day level, the way people dress or what they eat, mark a difference between a part of this immigrant population and the majority of Europeans. And it is not a difference of religion only. It's something larger. It's something which involves lifestyles, behaviors, values, customs. It is a cultural difference. The second factor is individualism. Individualism questions assumptions which were given for granted until not so many years ago. Secularization had already weakened the control the historical churches had on the central passages of human life, birth, marriage, death, etc. Now, the way these experiences are conceived and are lived is in the process of changing. The range of possibilities has become much larger, and the individual is in a position to make choices which just a few years ago were inconceivable. Europe is moving towards the coexistence of different ways of procreating, marrying, dying, which correspond to the different ethical persuasions, views of individuals, and which enjoy the same legal legitimacy. The whole debate going on in Europe regarding bioethics, or the recent reform in some European countries regarding family law, are the proof of this change and of this equal legitimacy that different ways of marrying, dying, procreating have gained. That is why I started my speech by saying, look, we do not have to face just a religious pluralism. We have to face a cultural and an ethical pluralism today. But to understand this new challenge properly, we need to understand its most innovative characteristic. It's a most interesting feature. And this feature is this cultural and ethical pluralism is by no means a result of the dissolution of the religious dimension in European society. On the contrary, this cultural and ethical pluralism is very frequently characterized by a strong religious connotation, or at least, at the minimum, it still takes place in a context which is dominated by the revanche de Dieu, by the return of God. On the one hand, the decline of the power of the historical churches to speak on behalf of the whole European society has been balanced by the development within these same churches of new groups and movements like the evangelicals in the Protestant field, or like the Opus Dei, or communion and liberation in the Catholic field. And these new groups and movements are all strongly motivated by the aim to manifest their religious identity in all fields of human life. And consequently, these movements want to affirm the religious foundation of the ethical, political, cultural choices. On the other hand, the distinction between religion, ethics, culture and politics, which had been accepted willingly or unwillingly by the Christian churches in Europe, is not part and parcels of the new religious groups which entered Europe in the last 40 years, starting from the so-called new religious movements and ending with Islam. As a consequence, cultural and ethical choices are very frequently justified through a direct reference to religion. Think of the affair of the Islamic scarf. Until 15 years ago, the Islamic scarf was mainly regarded as an ethnic custom, something connected to ethnicity. Today, it is perceived as something concerning primarily religion, primarily a religious expression. Or think of my country, Italy. Italy, the distinction in Italy between religion and politics is much weaker today than when the Christian Democrat Party ruled the country until 15 years ago, 20 years ago. At that time, the task to provide Italian political life with a Christian orientation was given to laymen who were engaged in politics. Today, after the collapse and the disappearance of the Christian Democrat Party, The same task has been taken up directly by the bishops, who did not hesitate to give a very precise and very stringent political indications regarding the referendum on artificial fertilization or the draft law on registered partnership. So, the final outcome of this transformation of this mix between religion, culture, ethics, and politics has been that negotiation and compromise are much more difficult today than 20 years ago. And that because when ethical and cultural choices are directly connected to the will of God, they tend to become non-negotiable. They tend to become something which cannot be, upon which you can't compromise. That is, in my opinion, as I see the picture, what happened and what is still happening. Now, the following step is, which are the legal consequences of this change? Which is the impact of this transformation of the European religious landscape on the systems of law and religion in Europe? The starting point here is the fact that the traditional mechanisms which regulated the different areas where human activity takes place do not work properly anymore. Confronted, I said that at the beginning, with a pluralism that is not only religious but also ethical and cultural, these mechanisms have problems in granting the freedom of religious communities without falling in the anarchy of particularisms. And this central problem, this central difficulty, can be understood better if we think how these mechanisms were born. They started taking shape as a way to put an end to the wars of religion after the Protestant Reformation. The central question then was how to make possible a peaceful coexistence in the same country of people with different religious faith. It was religious pluralism. It was not cultural or ethical pluralism. And so the solution could be found through the neutralization of the impact of religion on public life. That was the solution. And also the secularization of public institutions took place late in the 19th century, not much before that. And also this secularization of the public institutions was never complete in Europe. The theoretical solution to that problem had been found much earlier with the Etsi Deus non daretur of Grotius. That is the theoretical answer to the wars of religion. The Etsi Deus non daretur has a double consequence.
Excuse me, would you please translate that Latin
phrase? Ex Deus non daretur is. We should build a way to live together in the public square which can stay even if God were not there. That is the concept. We need to place the public life on a ground which is autonomous from the existence of God. And this theoretical approach to the problem had first the consequence to move the center of gravity of religion from public to private life. Religion can stay, but in the private life, not in the public life. And at the same time, it moved the center of gravity of law from divine law to natural law based on reason. That was the second consequence, which happened at the same time. In other words, to make possible a peaceful coexistence between Catholics, Protestants, Anglicans, etc., etc., the law, the economy, politics, and the other areas of public life had to be secularized, placing them under the exclusive control of reason and freeing them from the control of religion. That was the solution theoretically given to the problem in the 16th, 17th century. It was applied later on, but the theoretical framework was there. But the problem is that this solution, which worked reasonably well at that time, cannot be repeated now. And cannot be repeated now, first, because the connections between religion, culture, ethics and politics make much more difficult the process of secularization, the distinctions on which the secularization process is based. And second, because the assumption that religion is a private matter which should not influence public choices is exactly what is being questioned now. It exactly the point of confrontation now. And so it's necessary to find new legal mechanisms which take into account the new public role of religions on the one hand, which take into account the new public role of religions. And the problem we have to face is how is it possible to do that without falling into what French call communautarism, which erodes the hard core of shared values that are necessary for social cohesion. How it is possible to take into account the new role of religious communities without endangering a core of shared values which grant social cohesion? This is the problem we have to face now. And As a consequence of this transformation, church and state systems in Europe started changing, all over Europe. I don't have time to go into details, but if you want, I can, during the discussion, I can show you the reforms, the changes which took place in the last 10, 15 years. And they are too many and too close in time to be just a coincidence. The most plausible explanation is that the European legal system is taking into account the change of the religious European landscape, and it is adjusting to this change. This is my interpretation, my view of this, of these reforms. But the following step is another question. Is it possible to identify a direction of this change? Is it possible to identify a trend? Do these reforms follow a definite course? And if so, is it possible to identify it? And I shall try to answer this question, starting from a distinction which I don't like very much, because it is, in my opinion, outdated. But we can take it as the starting point. And the distinction is between countries with separation of church and state, countries with a state church, and countries with concordats and agreements between state and religions. I don't like this distinction. I don't think it is a correct picture.
But if you, even if you don't like it, would you please put one or two countries in each of these three?
Yeah. Of course. When I speak of countries with a state church or a church state, for example, I think of Denmark, just to make the most obvious remark. When I think of countries with separation, I think of France. When I think of countries with concordats and agreements, I think, for example, of Germany. Just to give you a few examples. Now, if we start from these taxonomy, from this typology, what can we observe? The first fact to emerge from this analysis is the decline of the system of Church of State. On the one hand, all the post-communist European countries, even those with a strong Lutheran tradition, did not accept, did not endorse a Church of State in their new constitutions. On the other hand, Sweden gave up its Church of State a few years ago. Norway seems on the point to follow the same path. Finland changed the system in a central feature some years ago, giving the power to appoint bishops to the church, to the faithful of the Lutheran Church, and no more to the head of state, etc., etc. And if we extend our analysis to the south of Europe, we see that those countries which have a constitutionally prevailing religion, which in a way is the pendant of the state church in the north part of Europe, those countries which have a constitutionally dominant religion are in the same situation. All the post-communist European countries where the Orthodox religion is the majority did not state in their constitution that the Orthodox religion is the dominant religion of the country. The Greek example has not been followed by any country with an Orthodox majority. The English system of an established church seems to fare a little better, basically, in my opinion, because the Church of England quickly understood the need to accept pluralism and took the decision to exercise its power and its prerogatives on behalf of all the religions existing in England, in the country. The Anglican bishops, who are by law members of the House of the Lords, very frequently act as representatives of the different religious communities, and not only of the Church of England. But it's still to be seen whether in the long run this strategy will succeed in counterbalancing the demands for a disestablishment which are regularly voiced in England by important sections of the English public opinion. If this picture is correct, the question is why? Why the Church of State system is declining? Why the systems with the Church of State or a dominant religion are declining? And in my opinion, the answer is because this system does not fit a religiously fragmented society. Particularly, if religious membership is no more a private matter, but a public statement, a public expression of identity. The state choice to have an official religion presupposes an homogeneous country from a religious point of view. When people are divided among different faiths, the state adoption of one of them becomes a weakness because it prevents a part of the citizens from fully identifying with the public institutions. That is, in my opinion, the first movement. But there is a second movement going on in Europe, which affects the countries with a separation system. Separation is a very popular word in the constitutions of the post-communist European countries. They all, or many of them, declare the principle of separation between church and state in their constitutions. Probably because of the influence the United States had in the preparation of these constitutions. But if these constitutions are considered more closely, you see that this separation does not exclude the recognition of the church by the state, does not exclude the conclusion of concordats and agreements. What I want to say, this new separation has little to do with the separation written in the French law of 1905, the law which says the state does not recognize nor support any religion, and on the contrary is a friendly separation, a soft separation, which coexist with the constitutional provisions which oblige the state to cooperate with the churches. And a similar and analogous process of transformation of separation, of the meaning of separation, took place also in the country, which is the symbol of separation, France. In France we have a ministry, the Ministry of Interior, for example, which took a very important role in building the representative organization of the Muslim community. We have a foundation declared public utility foundation, the Fondation pour les œuvres de l'Islam en France, which has the task to encourage the building of mosques. We have an institute, l'Institut Européen en Sciences de Religion, which has the task to teach the teachers of public schools about the importance of religion in social life. I mean, even in France, separation has become much less rigid, and it does not exclude anymore the intervention of the state in areas which, until a few years ago, were considered to be outside the boundaries of the state, outside the interest of the state. And then we needed to put the question, why these separation systems are changing? And this time the answer is the new significance acquired by religion, by religions, at the political and public level. After the decline of the great secular ideologies, communism, etc., religions seems to be the only forces still capable to speak the language of collective identities, still capable to offer their faithful an interpretation of reality and also a sense of membership. And therefore religions have the power to mobilize an important number of followers. And this power is too important to be ignored by governments. Governments, on the one hand, are afraid that religion is exploited to create social unrest. And on the other hand, the same governments are tempted to exploit religion for their own political aims. And all of this cannot be done, cannot be attained, without meddling with religion, without interfering with religion, without establishing relations with religious communities, that is, without giving up rigid separation. So, as I see the process, we have an ongoing movement in Europe, which is a process of convergence from the extremities towards the center. The extremities are, on the one hand, the countries where we have a church-state system, and on the other hand, the countries where we have a separation system. But which is the center? Where is the center? Which is the direction of this convergence? And I think that a good answer has been given in Sweden. If we analyze the Sweden reform, we can understand a lot of things. Because in Sweden, giving up the Church of State did not mean to accept separation of Church and State. The Lutheran Church is still governed by a special law, which applies only to the Lutheran Church. And the other religions are disciplined according to a system of registration. They need to register to get a legal status. And this arrangement maintains a special position for the old Church of State and at the same time makes it possible to affirm the laicité and the impartiality of the state even at the level of values, at a formal level. And more or less a similar model has been adopted by those European states which recently reformed the church and state system. For example, Portugal and Austria. Religious communities in these countries can register in different forms and according to the type of registration they are able to obtain, they receive different state support, different state aid. And this solution offers public recognition to religious communities. At the same time gives the state some control over them. The state can decide. Yes, I register you, no, maybe try again in 2 years. Has some degree of control. And the state can graduate its support according to the importance of the different religions, or to be more precise, according to the importance that the state gives to the different religions. This is, in my opinion, a little bit the center. These are the features of the center, which is not articulated in the same way in the different states. Each state has its own system. But these features are recurring in the different national systems. Well, I think that more or less it's time to conclude my speech. A couple of final remarks. First, it seems that Jonathan Fox was right when a few years ago he wrote, "Modernization does not imply separation of church and state. Modernization implies a moderate involvement of a state with religions." It is more or less what is happening in these days in Europe. But this is an ongoing process. We cannot yet be sure of the final outcome. There are some variables which could change the trend, which could modify, alter the direction of this process. And the most important variable, in my opinion, is the transformation of religious communities in centers of strong collective identities, and the limited ability of the European church and state system to take into account, to take in the results, the consequences of this transformation of religions in centers of collective identities. Let me explain a little more this final point. A legal system does not work in an empty space. It is the child of history. And it can work as long as some conceptual categories, some central philosophical categories remain unchanged. What I want to say is that the European system of relationship between states and religion presupposes a certain notion of state and a certain notion of religion. For example, it requires that religion is primarily conceived as a personal choice, something I can choose, and not as a membership or not as a heritage transmitted from father or mother to son, with all the consequences that this difference makes when we come to change my religion, adopt a new religion, etc., etc. At the same time, the European system of church and state relations requires that the state is not conceived as the tool for transforming the commandment of a religion, even if it is the majority religion. The state is not the tool for transforming the commandments of this religion into law. But the state is a place where decisions which affect the whole community are taken through a rational debate. That is, through a discussion which is open to people with different religious persuasions, with different religious faiths. These are some kind of boundaries, in my opinion, borders. If we do not respect these borders, the system, the European system of church and state cannot stand, will become something different, cannot resist as it is now, because it is based on this conception of religion as a personal choice and on this conception of state as a place where decisions are taken through a rational, I don't like it very much, this rational word, a reasonable debate, a debate where reason is the center. In a way we are still far, in my opinion, from these dramatic changes. They are still far away, but some thought should be given to them, because if not, we should really think that the system we know is going to change, is going to be substituted by something different. I'll stop here. Okay.